MatchMoody, to be clear, is not a teletherapy app. It's a toolkit app. It's an app for daily actions, weekly challenges, positive things one can do to improve their mental state in the present moment.
Hey everyone, Nathan Long here, president of Saybrook University, right here in beautiful Pasadena, California. It is sunny today. I think it's sunny every day here. Welcome to another episode of Saybrook Insights. Today, it has been a privilege and an honor to interview the CEO, or co-founder rather, Nate Thomas of Schmoody. Schmoody's a new app designed to support individuals' mental health and well-being, with the tagline that it's a mental health app that's fun to use. Nate's really great, and I think one of the things that really spoke to me during the course of our time together, he comes to this work with real authenticity because he has been living in the world of recovery. It's powerful stuff. And I think you're going to really resonate with what he has to say. Nate's a former VP at Goldman Sachs. He was a former practicing attorney and now this big-time entrepreneur. It's really cool to have listened to his evolution and also all the elements that fed into that. He received his philosophy BA from Duke University and his JD from Washington University. And again, I think what you'll hear is this piece of his work in active recovery from addiction and its impetus in getting him into this work and now into the very successful phase that Schmoody is in as it reaches 3 years and over 100,000 users worldwide. I think you're going to love the interview. And if you're interested in the app, go to Schmoody app, that's Schmoody app, app.com. All right, let's get to it with Nate Thomas of Schmoody. So I am joined today with a wonderful new acquaintance of mine, Mr. Nate Thomas. Nate is joining us from the great state of Texas, and we're looking forward to hearing more from Nate about Schmoody and everything else. But before we get started, Nate, welcome to the Saybrook Insights podcast. Good to have you here as a special guest.
Nathan, great to see you. Great to be here. Really happy to be joining today.
For those in the audience, Nate and I have had an opportunity to chat about Schmoody as an opportunity for our students, and also got to learn a lot more about his background in mental health and well-being. So, Nate, before we get into all the details about Schmoody, maybe just tell us about the Nate before Schmoody. Like, what are all the things that you were into and out and about, and a little bit about your background would be helpful for our audience.
Yeah, you bet. And there's, you know, obviously, like in any life, there's multiple phases, but I can skip over some of them, but maybe give you a few of the key kind of highlights and turning points. Prior to the time that Schmoody came into existence, which was really just about 3 years ago. It's been a wild and quick ride since we first created it, but you know, going back before then, I'm from Vermont. Had a lovely childhood and a lot of kind of early success and potential, and went to some great schools. I went to Duke University and had a great experience there, and then Washington University in St. Louis for law school, though I did pretty quickly realize I didn't want to be an attorney. That started to dawn on me fairly quickly, as it did for many of my fellow law students. But for me, a much more important turning point that didn't have to do so much with my intellectual or professional journey, but more sort of my holistic journey as a human being, was when I had to get sober 10 years ago. I'm somebody that used to casually use drugs and alcohol, and then maybe not so casually. And then I found myself in a position, despite all the denial that I was in at the time, where it became very clear that I had a serious problem. And that was a major thing for me. And it was a very, very challenging thing for me and for my family and for people that cared about me. And the thing that ultimately forced me into change was the recognition of the sort of damage that I was doing, not just to myself, but to those around me, and sort of the inability to show up the way I wanted to for both my, you know, professional roles, but also my personal roles and just in everything in my life. And so this was a huge turning point for me. This was about 11 years ago that journey started. And, without going too into the details, I was basically forced to surrender, forced through just sheer desperation, into asking for help, and ultimately finding a abstinence-based recovery community. It will go unnamed for purposes of press, radio, and film, but if anyone out there is looking for help and support and community in that world, it's very easy to find. The phone number is very close to the front of the phone book. I was resistant to change on multiple levels. I was particularly resistant to spiritual change as someone who was well-educated and thought of myself fairly highly in terms of intellect and things like that. I thought that anything spiritual was mumbo jumbo. And I was also frankly resistant to being part of a larger community, but I saw that other people were getting results that I wasn't. And I ultimately, in a place of pain, surrendered and ultimately had a sort of spiritual transformation. And, you know, that's a whole conversation for another time. But what ultimately came from that for me was a few things. One was a sort of commitment to daily positive actions, to work on myself, address the various parts of myself that needed addressing to be a healthy and whole person. It was connection to a broader community, which, like I said, I resisted at first. That community connection was incredibly important. And then it was a shift in terms of a desire to be of service to others and sort of committing myself to trying to use my own experience, the things that I'd been through, to help others. And that service mentality was previously very foreign to me, though I thought of myself as a good person. I wasn't doing much to be of service to my fellow humans. And so that shift, it took about a year for everything to finally come together, but it put me on this radically different path. And at first that meant just getting my life together, being able to hold down a job, which had been a little touch and go before that, despite my education and my background. And I sort of followed that path. I ended up at Goldman Sachs in New York, which was a really interesting opportunity to grow and, you know, certainly to learn a lot and grow professionally. But I knew it wasn't super aligned with my long-term values. There's nothing wrong with what the good people of Goldman are doing in the world, but for me, there felt like there was probably a greater calling, and I was actively searching for that. And then in the very early part of the pandemic, I was actively talking to some mentors that I'd put together, some very successful folks who'd done really interesting things in entrepreneurship and tech, who were encouraging me to do something to follow my passion. And I just didn't know what that would be. And then, as often the case, random circumstance and staying open to random circumstance changed things. I met a really interesting gentleman at a recovery meeting in the park in Brooklyn, New York. This was in the part of the pandemic when you couldn't go inside for meetings, but those of us who stayed very connected, this was at 10 years sober. At that point it was 8 years. But I met this interesting gentleman, and we just started becoming friends. And I said, I'm going to leave Goldman and do something that I'm more passionate about, and I'd like to build something, but I don't know what that is. And he said, oh, interesting. You know, I'm working at an accounting tech company, but I've recently been working on this app because I've dealt with, aside from addiction, I've dealt with depression and anxiety. And, you know, my therapist, this was him speaking, my therapist used to have me write down simple lists of the, you know, positive actions I can be taking through the day, kind of basic, you know, CBT kind of stuff. But he said, I looked for apps that would help me do this, and the only ones I found, I think his words were, the only ones I found really sucked. He said, you know, they felt very clinical, and they'd say designed by clinicians. And he said, well, yeah, you can tell when you use the app. It feels like you're sitting in a doctor's office waiting.
Fair enough.
And so he showed me this early version of what was Schmoody, and mind you, I didn't have any ideas at the time that, oh, this is the path. I was just curious that this new friend of mine was doing something very cool, and I could relate because I dealt with anxiety in my life quite a bit, and that was part of my journey after I got sober, was finding healthy ways to address my anxiety issues. He showed me an app that was beautiful and well designed, and I was blown away. I hadn't met anyone that had built an app. I'm not technical, you know, I was working in finance and I'm a lawyer. And he built this really beautiful and simple app, and it had jokes in it. And that really resonated with me because they were funny and irreverent. But for those of us that are in the world of recovery, we often comment how, you know, if people were to wander into one of these meetings, they would be a little bit shocked at some of the levity and the humor that they would hear talking about relatively dark things. But it turns out the humor is this very powerful force in connecting people, and changing people's state. It can be a very transformative force, and it binds communities together. And so the fact that that this app was written from the perspective of someone struggling with depression and struggling with anxiety, but being sort of funny and irreverent about it, really was, it seemed like a game changer to me. And so shortly after that, a few months after that, he asked me, he said, you know, our skill sets are very complementary and we share this vision of being of service. You know, would you be interested in being the co-founder of this app? And that was about 3 years ago. And it's been this sort of wild ride since then.
From New York to Texas and, you know, kind of in recovery, post-recovery, and doing all this soul-searching, you met this guy.
Yeah.
Very randomly at a park, right? I mean, in a recovery circle, and that's where you,
Right. Wow,
that's impressive.
And I mean, I will say that the cool thing about, you know, it is interesting what happens when you just stay open
exactly
to the possibilities, right? I was actively searching for something that would be more in line with my personal values and my mission in life. And, you know, I stayed open and then that person just came into my life. And, you know, we all might have instances where the right person comes into our life, but we're not open to it, or we're not, you know, we're not really aware of what we're looking for. But in this case, the great thing about it was that while our professional skill sets and our backgrounds were very different, what we knew we shared was this common set of values, this desire to be of service, and this desire to say, hey, let's take what we've been through personally and see if we can help people, because we do that in our regular recoveries anyways, but it's usually one-on-one. But what if we could build something that could actually help millions of people? It seemed like a really awesome opportunity. And so, yeah, that was the birth of Schmoody. And it's been a wild ride for 3 years since then. We've grown very, very fast and had a lot of early success, and it's been really cool. But it's fun to be on a ride building something with somebody who shares the values and the mission.
I want to get to the wild ride of that, because there's a bit of like an entrepreneurship. I'm not one. I'm an institutionalist, I guess. Not in the strict sense. I have so much love for entrepreneurs, because there's the courage, the innovation and creativity. I equate it to, we have a good friend of ours, Kevin, who is an acrobat and performs without a net. And I always wonder when I'm going to get the call that Kevin is no longer with us. On the flip side, it is one of the most exhilarating, most powerful expressions that he has. And I think of entrepreneurship in that way, that you're kind of operating without a net in many ways, and you're building something you love. And if it goes well, that's like a huge win. Can you talk for a minute about just the broad particulars about being an entrepreneur, especially in a space, in the app space especially? What has that been like for you, especially? You were trained up in institutions, organizations, and you were a lawyer in training, for heaven's sakes. All right. So love to hear more about that.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, it's something that's new to me these last 3 years. And in many ways, you know, it's certainly not for everyone. I do feel like I'm someone that's naturally sort of cut out for it, and that I enjoy building things. I enjoy building teams of people. I'm certainly very passionate about the issues that we're dealing with. And what I will say is that what I comment to people frequently, that it my tolerance for uncertainty has grown dramatically. It's constantly being tested. And whenever I say that, there's always this certain implication that now I've gotten to this point of, you know, I'm so okay with uncertainty that I've sort of arrived at enlightenment. And then as soon as I feel that way, I'm immediately hit by some new wave of uncertainty and challenges, which will probably never end, and it's part of this journey. And we're well aware that there's no guarantees. But what I could say is that my previous professional environment at Goldman, and God bless them, because I learned a lot, both in terms of, you know, specifics to finance and the legal challenges around that, but also just in terms of how to operate and execute in an organizational setting and deal with, you know, hard-charging personalities. And I learned so much, but there was, you know, you talk about having no net. There was too many nets to me. It was too stable. It was too boring. And then ultimately the mission at the end of the day, you know, I have nothing against, you know, wealth services and investment banking, but it wasn't really something I was passionate about. So what we're doing now, while we know there's no guarantees and there's a heck of a lot of uncertainty, there's this feeling of, well, we're actively impacting people. you know, we have almost 100,000 people using the app each month, monthly active users who, you know, we get all this feedback from that's so positive. So that in itself is really rewarding. We have the potential to grow, you know, to help millions of people. And we're very much on that path. And then personally, whatever the outcome ends up being 5 years from now or 10 years from now, there's this opportunity for constant personal growth that I really do find very valuable. Like, I won't come out of the experience being the same person I went into the experience with as. And so that to me is really worth it. And so we'll see how everything unfolds. There's certainly no guarantees, but to do something you really believe in, and that you know that every day you're growing from doing it professionally, personally, spiritually. I mean, there's a huge spiritual challenge in just showing up and saying, like, I take the actions, and God, the universe, whatever is in charge of the results, and let's just go take a bunch of actions that we believe in. And it's a different way to live, but it is exhilarating in a lot of ways. And if it wasn't, it wouldn't be worth it for me if I didn't believe so much in what we're doing.
Yeah.
If I was just saying, like, oh, I really think I've found a little corner of fintech that there's money to be made, I don't know if the late nights would be possible. But because this is about mental health and this is something that we deal with ourselves, we have that drive.
I want to go back to clearly a pivotal area in your life, which was recovery. We'll get into Schmoody in a minute, I promise, and in the details. But I think for so many who are out there right now going through tough times, trying to figure out their way through addiction and recovery, because often it's an up and down, in and out, and then you find that something sticks. And it sounds like for you, you had that moment, that pivotal moment for you, clearly a really good support structure that resonated with you with the abstinence-based program that you were with, which we won't name, but it's at the front of the phone book. Hey, everyone. So if you want to talk to that a little bit in terms of what would you say to folks currently who are experiencing addiction and how to, you know, what are some things that they should be thinking about as they, you know, consider recovery and what that looks like? And I know it's different for everyone, but if there's anything from your perspective that you found helpful or even just cautionaries, I think that would be useful.
Well, absolutely. And I certainly don't want to generalize my experience to all people who are dealing with, you know, maybe having a few too many glasses of wine, or, you know, maybe they're taking too much of their Adderall prescription or whatever. There, you know, there's different degrees. And there are many folks that, you know, some kind of moderation management can work. There's a whole separate class of folks, of which I count myself one, who, though they frankly won't admit it, have crossed some invisible threshold into what I would call true alcoholism or true addiction, where there's no longer really any proper control, though the illusion of control, the brain doesn't want to let go of it, but where if one takes a serious look at one's life, one can see where, well, there's detrimental effects that continue to happen, and yet I continue to engage in this behavior. There's times when I try to stop engaging in this behavior, and I'm at least some of the time unable to stop. And for folks that have fallen into that class, and again, that includes me, I do believe that some sort of asking for help, some sort of connecting to a community of people, such as the ones at the beginning of the phone book, it's the only way that I found that would work for me, was asking for help. And there's something about that act of asking for help that I think is, though people might not think of that as a spiritual experience, I do believe, because the program that I've found works for me is, in fact, a spiritual program, not a religious one, mind you, but a spiritual one. That act of asking for help, the ego really hates that. And what I've learned is anything the ego really hates in this realm is a good thing for me, because my ego is trying to run the show and say, I have it under control. I'm smarter than these people. I can figure this out. And for me, I consistently could not figure it out. So the act of asking for help was an act of ego deflation. It allowed other people to come in. And then those people made suggestions to me in the spiritual realm, which then the ego came back and I said, nope, not going to do that stuff. I'm an educated man. There'll be no prayer and meditation for me. you know, there'll be no turning my will over to some nope. And then it, frankly, it didn't work until I got to a point of desperation when basically I surrendered. I said, I may or may not believe in every suggestion that's given to me, but it seems to be working for other people. So why don't I just ask for help and then let the help in? And so if someone's really struggling, that is what I would suggest, is to ask for help from people that seem to be getting the results that you want, and then have that humility to actually take action and take the suggestions, even if they don't make sense, or what I would say is especially if they don't make sense. Because again, the ego hates that, and that's good.
Yeah. No, super advice. And I think that is really tremendous and coming into that. And I think that advice is so true for everything in life. I often will say to students, especially grad students who come in and they're new, and I know this is kind of apples and oranges, but there's a fit here. There's a fear of admitting you don't know, or of being vulnerable, you know, in just something like a classroom environment where you're having to say, hey, I really don't get this, or I'm mistaken. And I think, you know, as a advice I was given many years ago by a mentor of mine who said, hey, you know, live in the ambiguity, live in the humility of not knowing, because there's where you'll find hope. There's where you can find answers potentially, and opportunity. And in this case, opportunity for recovery. I really appreciate how you framed that. I think that was quite beautiful. So thank you for that.
No, thanks, Nathan. And I will say briefly that I appreciate what you said too about this kind of attitude being of willingness to ask for help being really valuable in all areas of life. It's something I had to go through this pain of recovery to learn, but then it was something that was taught to me in the recovery process, was to ask for help, not just in the things that were very specific to, let's say, not drinking and not using drugs, but in all areas. If I can get to a place where I'm just willing to put down my pride and ask for help, actually amazing things happen. And that, I mean, that even relates to the entrepreneurial journey. I sometimes think that some of our biggest breakthroughs and successes on our journey, because we have had kind of this rocket ship success in these early 3 years, relates to that willingness to reach out to someone incredibly successful and say, hey, I admire what you're doing. I don't quite know the steps to get there. Can you help? Or we're trying to solve a very specific technical problem with what we're building. And yeah, we think we're really smart, but the reality is we don't know the answer to this. Find someone and say, can you help? It could apply to anything. It certainly applies in an educational setting, because our pride likes to get in the way, or mine does anyway. But the more I get used to being willing to ask for help, the more I can be open to, there's just so many talented people that know so many amazing things, and so many of us are running around trying to pretend like we know it all, but we don't.
Even those of us who think we do, we don't. We really don't. Yeah.
Especially those of us who think we do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I want to get into Schmoody for a few minutes in our remaining time here. And, you and I talked about this when we last met, and I think for our audience, they hear me harp on this continuously. And it's important because we are in the midst of and have been in this major mental health crisis nationally, globally, frankly. And it's been around for as long as I think you and I have been alive, but it has just continuously gotten in many areas worse, exacerbated by the fentanyl opioid crisis. It's been exacerbated through a number of different areas where we're seeing higher rates of depression, suicidal ideation, et cetera. So it's looking pretty grim out there right now. And client demand, this is a big concern for me too, is it where Saybrook is concerned. We're small, but the client demand for services is way outstripping the number of therapists who are available, plus, you've got the access and affordability issues. I just had a good conversation yesterday with a CEO of a really innovative integrative health group, and they still can't, to scale it just yet is not possible. So they're not able to reach as many people as they would like, right? And so this informs to me, and I think it really serves as a backdrop. I know Schmoody isn't going to be all things to all people, so I don't want to put that label on it. But certainly talk about this for a minute in terms of the mental health gaps and well-being support and how that has informed Schmoody's development, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, absolutely, Nathan. And, you know, there is obviously this mental health crisis. You know, the most recent numbers I saw said that 58% of Gen Z now report feeling symptoms of depression. You know, this is aside from a formal diagnosis, but just, you know, the amount of people, more than half of young people saying that they've been experiencing symptoms of depression. And I don't think the numbers are much better for millennials or for Gen X or for anyone, frankly. And it is worldwide. And we can talk forever about the reasons. Obviously, the opioid epidemic, the pandemic did not help things, of course. The growing societal trends towards isolation, you know, even aside from the pandemic, people not connecting as much to the community and those they love. And then social media, I could go on a long rant, and then that's a conversation for another time. I do really love Jonathan Haidt's work on some of the impact that social media is having on.
Yeah, good stuff.
It's really good stuff, and you can really draw a pretty direct line, especially for young people. But what we see, you know, when we look at the mental health landscape, I mean, we know things that have worked for us as kind of subject matter experts and, you know, dealing with depression and anxiety, but, you know, we also talk to a lot of therapists here in Austin. We have several that work with us in terms of some of the content in the app, but, you know, we're big advocates for therapy. Unfortunately, there are a good amount of people who cannot afford therapy. There are also people who have a hard time and get frustrated in finding the right therapist, someone they feel like they can actually connect with. And then there are other people that for whatever reason are very resistant to therapists. So we're big advocates for therapy. In fact, you know, Schmoody, to be clear, is not a teletherapy app. It's a toolkit app. It's an app for daily actions, weekly challenges, positive things one can do to improve their mental state in the present moment and build positive habits over time, and then also to connect people to community. But we advocate in the app, you know, if people can't afford a therapist, they should absolutely get one. Even for folks that can go to therapy and are lucky enough to do that, there are, of course, many hours in the week when I'm not in my therapist's office. And, you know, I love therapy, but it's not a cure-all. I still need to go out and take positive actions in my life. And so there are, you know, there's a lot of knowledge that's out there in terms of what those kind of positive actions and positive habits can be. Obviously, there's a lot to be learned from CBT and DBT. In fact, a lot of that is what shows up directly in Schmoody and in our action plans. The problem that we see is that very, very few people, even those who are kind of aware of those tools, actually take action on them. And a tool that you don't use is worthless, right? So you know, the simple analogy is, like, many people know that it's good to eat your vegetables, and yet a lot of people don't eat vegetables. So for us, the question is, how do we get people to eat their vegetables? And to us, the answer, borrowing, you know, again, Schmoody's not an app for addiction, but borrowing, though we have useful tools for people that are going through that process, but it's primarily for anxiety, depression, and folks who are just dealing with overwhelm and stress and these kinds of symptoms. But we've borrowed from the world of addiction recovery this idea that it doesn't have to feel cold and clinical. There can be a community support aspect that adds humanity to it. And there can also be a fun aspect where we, you know, we make it gamified, we make it funny. The idea is to be like your funny friend who's supporting you and encouraging you to take care of yourself, to treat yourself like somebody that you love. And that it's an ongoing challenge. I won't say that we 100% solved it, but we found ways to present these simple actions to folks in a way that helps them actually take the action, right? So if I told you that, you know, if you're having a rough time and you're stuck in bed, and I said, well, you know, if you do a breathing exercise, go for a walk, and call somebody you love, that's going to change the way you feel. The reality is that is going to change the way you feel. So then we have to present that to you in a way that's actually going to get you to take action. So that's the big gap that we're really trying to solve. Is not some sort of scientific breakthrough in some previously unknown type of therapy or type of actions. It's really taking what's pretty well known in terms of the basic things people can be doing throughout their day and throughout their week, and getting them to actually do those things.
That's awesome.
And it works as a great complement to therapy. It works as a great complement to goal setting. We do think of it as a holistic approach. It's a toolkit that helps on a day-to-day basis, because our experience has been, you know, when it comes to depression and anxiety personally, like, there's no cure, but what there is a sort of a steady recovery that can happen, where there's still ups and downs, but the trajectory of that curve is steady, or maybe even slightly up and to the right. But it's a matter of taking action regularly. And so that's the sort of space that we're trying to fill. And the major missing piece there is that there are some other toolkit apps that are out there, but these are the ones that just feel incredibly clinical and boring. And the reality is, most people are not, when they're feeling depressed, are not going to reach for those apps. They're just going to go back to TikTok. They're just going to go back to Instagram. And that's what we think of as the real competition, right? How can we build something that's fun enough to use that someone's going to use it instead of going back to TikTok?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a challenge, because TikTok is incredibly addictive. But so that's what we set out to build with Schmoody, and we've come a long way. I mean, the early version of the product was very cool, but holy cow, it's come a long way. And we actually have a major new version 3 that's coming, that's really about a couple weeks away right now, that's got even more amazing and fun features in it. So that's really what we set out to do, is help people take those actions that help them work on themselves and feel better, and actually get them to take action.
All right. I'm looking forward to version 3. I've got version 2, so I'm all set.
Yeah.
All right. That's great. So from your perspective then, as the co-founder, what is in your mind does success look like here in 5-7 years? What would you dream would be the best case scenario for Schmoody?
Yeah, I think the best case scenario is that we already have a somewhat worldwide reach, but it's really a massive adoption by folks who need us. And there's so many people that need help on a daily basis with their mental health. So, you know, we've had hundreds of thousands of downloads of the app. We have a free version, which is very robust, but then there's a premium version where folks get access to everything possible in the app, and we have about 33,000 premium subscribers right now. I would say, which is great, because we only introduced a premium version of the app a year ago, so it's grown very fast. But an ideal situation in 10 years is, you know, let's say 10 million paying subscribers, and then millions more than that can't afford or don't want to pay for a premium, but still have access to the app and the basic tools, because that's important to us too. Even if somebody can't afford, it's only $40 a year, but there's folks that can't or don't want to pay that, and we want those people to have access to the tools too. So I think a broad reach like that is one of the ultimate goals. And the other is really to build this brand that people like and trust and feel affinity for, that basically that everyone, especially young people, has on their phone. So if you think about, like, every millennial has Instagram on their phone. And you can argue about whether Instagram is doing positive or negative things for mental health. I would say it's doing negative things. But it seems obvious to us that 10 years from now, as you know, more and more people become aware of the nature of the mental health crisis and the importance of taking care of their own mental health, that there's going to be an app that emerges as something that everybody has on their phone, that or most people do. And it's going to be something, though, that's actually fun and social, that has an element of community to it. And so we want Schmoody to be that app. So we really think there's this amazing opportunity to impact the lives of tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people worldwide. And we're still early in that journey. But people need tools. They need all the tools they can get. And so that's what we're trying to do, is to bring those tools to people.
Really wicked inspiring, Nate. I really appreciate the overview there. I think it ties in beautifully to a lot of the things that Saybrook and other places like Saybrook are trying to do in terms of broadening the opportunities and reach. And I think if you're hearing this now, for those of you in our audience, go download it. It's worth a look. Even if you just do the free app, I think it's well worth the look-see and giving it a test drive. The one other piece I'd like for you to just promote here is, where can people go find the app? I mean, clearly for those who are schooled in app store stuff, and maybe just give your spiel on that. That would be great.
Yeah, you bet. And I definitely, people can find us at www.schmoodyapp.com, but an even far better way is just to go to the App Store, whether it's on Apple or Google Play, and search for Schmoody. There is no C. It's not the Yiddish spelling. It is the S-H-M-O-O-D-Y spelling. And you'll see the Meditating Cat, who is our beloved Schmoody Cat mascot. And download the app and check it out. And the other thing I'll say for folks, and this would be especially true for your listeners, whether they be at Saybrook or other folks who happen to be listening, is, you know, we were really proud of the app and we think it's amazing, but we're constantly making it better. So we encourage people to give us feedback, especially the folks that are the kind of users who whether they're a provider or they're somebody that's dealing with their own mental health, like, we want feedback because that's how we consistently get better. And we've grown so much in the last 3 years, partly from talking to users constantly and getting that kind of feedback. So, yeah, we encourage people to download the app and check it out.
That's terrific. So for our Saybrook students, faculty, and staff, you can find that on the community sites page for our students. And that's located. We have two other apps that we promote, and Schmoody is one of them. Again, we get no money from Schmoody, FYI. We're just trying to find multiple tools for our students and our community to use to improve. And for those students who are interested in, I know many of you would love to give feedback, Nate and his team is your group to reach out to. So Nate, before we wrap up here, I have two questions of all my guests. Because we're a humanistic university, that's our founding guiding principle, is humanistic philosophy and psychology. I ask all my guests, so it's whatever comes to mind for you. There is no right answer per se on this. What does the term humanistic mean for you?
It's a great question, and I'm glad to hear there's no right answer because I don't want to fail the quiz.
Yeah, you're good.
But I think there's two things. One is, you know, I'm not an expert at all in humanistic psychology, but I have a general awareness, and so that comes to mind, and the idea of treating human beings as, you know, fully whole human beings and not just looking at one little aspect. I think the famous line is, you know, not just a bag of symptoms, but, you know, thinking about integrated humans who have a spiritual component, a physical component, an intellectual component, a social component. I'm just listing those because those are the different areas that we actually think about in the app in terms of giving people actions and all of those. But so that part resonates with me, though I'm not an expert on humanistic psychology. I believe in treating human beings as whole entities. And of course, then those people, each individual also connects to a broader community, a broader society. And it's important to look at those connections too. The other piece that comes up for me is just humanism. And I'm a big fan of the book Enlightenment Now by Steven Pinker. That's put it on your reading list if folks who are listening haven't read it. It's one of the more optimistic books of recent years because it shows a picture of human society that's actually improving. But one of the values that he espouses that really stems from the Enlightenment values is humanism as just the goal of human flourishing. You know, the goal as a society and as a moral North Star that we should be aiming for human flourishing across all its dimensions as what we're really after as individuals, as communities, and as societies. And I'm a big fan of that that philosophy.
That's terrific. You get an A. I mean, you did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the last question we ask, and we get really terrific responses from across the spectrum of people we've interviewed here, and you will be right in that category, I have no doubt. What are three takeaways someone right now that they can do right now to improve their mental health, their physical health, and well-being that Nate from Schmoody would recommend?
I would say you could start right now and you can start with yourself. So the first thing I would recommend is to connect with your physical body in some way. It's easy to ignore in our age of sitting at screens, but I would say do a breathing exercise, 10 deep, slow, mindful breaths, as slow as you can go. or go for a walk. If you're a little bit more athletically inclined, go for a run. That actively will change. Engaging with the physical body like that will actively change how you feel. Whether you believe it or not, by the time you do it, you're going to feel different. The second thing I would suggest is connection. It can be done right now. Anybody can reach down to their phone and send a text to their mom, to send a text to their kid. Bonus points if you want to tell them how you feel about them, but you don't even, you know, tell them you love them, but you don't even have to. But even better is to pick up the phone, of course, and make a phone call. Call somebody you love. That act of human connection is one of the things that's easy to forget about and one of the things that's often lost in our busy society. So I would say call somebody you love as number two. And then the third thing I would suggest that's a little bit bigger picture, but you can still take action on today, is to find a way to be of service. It's the thing that changed my life the most, is finding a way to be helpful to others on a regular basis. And that could be some sort of volunteer organization. It could be joining a support group where you actually help support others. It could be as simple as, I'm gonna promote the app one more time, but in the app we have, one of our investors came across it and he texted me, so happy that he did. He's like, Schmoody told me to pick up trash. But we actually, it's a hack to feel better. But if you actually just are really feeling down and go pick up some trash and throw it away, I mean, other people's trash out on the street, it's an act of service. You're not thinking about yourself. And of course, there's big and small ways to be of service. But finding ways to be of service is a proven way, and I can also speak to it personally, to start feeling better about yourself and your own situation. So those would be my three.
Fantastic. Wow, what a great set of ideas for our audience to take away. Nate, thank you so much for being here on our podcast. It's been a pleasure, an honor, and a privilege. One last time, where can people find your app?
They can find us on the Google Play Store or the Apple Store, Schmoody, or they can go to www.schmoodyapp.com.
Fantastic. All right, Nate Thomas, thank you so, so much.
Nathan, thank you so much. It's been wonderful. Great talk.
Nate was fabulous. And thank you, Nate, for all of your insights. Really, really powerful stuff. For our audience today, remember Nate's three major takeaways. Connect with your physical body. Take a breath, or take 10 very long, slow breaths, or go for a walk or a run. This changes how you feel in your relationship, both to your physical presence and your mental and emotional state. Number two, create connections. Send a text. I loved how Nate said this, bonus points for telling someone how you feel. So right now, think of picking up your phone, send a WhatsApp or a text message to someone close to you who you love, or maybe you feel just needs to hear it. It will send those endorphins running up and also help you start to feel better. And I love this piece, find a way to be of service in your community, at home, in your neighborhood, wherever that might be, find that opportunity to be of service. If you want to see the YouTube version of today's podcast, please visit our Saybrook YouTube page. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go to Apple iTunes and leave that 5-star rating and review and subscribe so you can get episodes as they come out. You know the drill. If you're on Spotify, leave that 5-star rating and make sure to follow us. And you've got the whole constellation of other podcast apps you can find us on, including Google, Stitcher, Pandora, and others. Remember to check out our show notes for information on today's guests, including links to websites, books, and the like. And for more about our fabulous university, go to www.saybrook.edu. Click on Areas of Study at the top of the page and locate the program of your choice to learn more. Or simply Google Saybrook University. That's all for today, folks. Thank you so much. Take care.